everybody. Name's DJ. I haven't seen most of you in a while, or some of you anyways. How you guys doing? Long time listener, first time in a while talker. Wanted to share some things with everybody today. But I tell you what, I want to try to get through this so we actually come to a destination. I'm not going to book chapter verse you to death. I know the audience, you guys, you know the scriptures. We'll go a few places, but some of it I may just refer to it or quote it and keep moving. So today would be a good day to just kind of kick back, relax, maybe kick your feet up if the person in front of you doesn't mind too much, and we'll just see where it goes. So there's some things you got to think about. When we read the scriptures, we're getting a view into the mind of God. He's communicating to us. So we get to see kind of where he's at, what he's thinking, what he wants from us. So when we're doing that, we have to kind of put ourselves in that place and understand why he's saying some of the things that he says. And that is the title to this message. It's not the what, but the why. The why is the concept underneath whatever it is being talked about that is the timeless part of Scripture that can be applied and used no matter where you live in the world or what the date on the calendar is. Because, you know, this was written 2,000 years ago, and God had to leave something for all generations, for all people, for all time that was going to be useful to them. And really what you see is what he's doing is he's retraining the mind of people. And this is towards the end of it, but I'll give you a little snippet into the end. At the beginning, people, their first experience in life, they're trained by the world. We call it carnal-minded, physical. That's where a lot of the problems come into play with people, and that's why there should be a draw then to want to know God, because what God does then is he retrains our minds. He re-educates us, but this time with truth, facts, in a proper way, with standards, morality, all the things a person needs to be functional and successful in life. So that's what's going on. That's what's being done. That's how we need to read when we read, so we can pick up on these things, because we have to live a life down here. And not just that, we're all different people, and we live different lifestyles. But we have to still consider the standards that God has set as to how we can still be pleasing in his sight, and but still be able to live. That's why God had to do away with the law, because the law finds things to be sin. Well, if you want to find sin, it's going to be in you. It's going to be in the heart of man. That's where it is. The things tend to bring it out. But going around trying to just label all these things as sin is not a very good way of doing things. So sometimes you may be right and sometimes you may be wrong. I don't like dealing with 50-50 kind of operating procedures. I'd rather be a little bit more concrete than that. So after saying what I said about how God wrote this to be timeless for all people to be able to live their lives off of it, I want to now give you a couple examples so you kind of understand what I'm saying here. So there's a lot of places in Scripture, New Testament we're talking, where he talks about the dangers of drinking, of alcohol. Okay, well, why does he do that? Well, I believe he used alcohol because it was available to him to use at that time. Because again, we're thinking 2,000 years ago. So it was a good thing for Jesus to use, because he could convey a lot of messages with it. And all the scriptures you want to look at, and I've looked at them all, it's always the excessiveness. It's the drunkenness. It's when it has more power over you than you have over it, and it controls you. But it's not just confined to alcohol. I'm sure you've heard it said about people at one time or another, they're drunk with power. Well, what does that mean? It means it's consumed them. It completely runs them. It has more power over them than they have over it. It's that type of thinking. So it's not the what, it's the why. And then we can convey that into whatever else we want to get figured out. Let's go to Luke 21 and verse 34. Luke 21, verse 34, Jesus says, "But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life. And that day comes on you unexpectedly," obviously that day being the day of judgment. So he labels a few things there, and the biggest one I like is the cares of this life. So he's saying it's more than just this one thing. It's anything in the world that takes the place of God as the highest point of your life, or the throne of your heart, basically. And that's what we see with Jesus, because that's what Satan did to him. Remember, he took him in the wilderness and offered him the whole world. Said, "I'll give you everything. Just fall down and worship me." He said, "Get behind me, Satan. You're an offense to me." And then later he says that the tempter is coming for me, but he has nothing in me. So what does all that mean? It means nothing of this earth had control over Jesus. He was in control of everything on the earth, all the temptations or anything. Nothing was higher than his focus on pleasing his Father and being right with God. That's the same thing that we need to have. So that's how we need to examine our lives. Another one I like is Romans 12. Now here's another thing that people sometimes don't quite pick up on. This idea of sober-minded. Again, the word sober, we just relate that with alcohol, and we think that that's what that means, to not be drunk. Well, and when you read Romans 12 here in verse 3, he says, "For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith." So here, then you have to take that word and dissect it down and define it as to what it actually means. So what it means to be sober-minded is to be clear of thought, to have your mind clear. There's other things besides, you know, drugs or alcohol that can cloud a person's judgment. And that's what he's saying here. Apparently, pride. Pride can cloud your judgment. Because, see, now there's an outside force that is influencing your decision-making and your thought process. Fear is another one. Fear can be a big one, too. People tend to see things a little differently if there's something they're afraid to deal with. Well, then you're not thinking soberly. That would be a self-imposed delusion, I suppose. And we have to be wary of these things and be mindful of them and make sure we're not falling into these things, that we are staying clear of thought, sober-minded, as he calls it. So okay, I probably don't have time, but I can't help myself. Now that I've given you all that and talked about this alcohol thing, here's something that I'm really passionate about, and it just really bothers me, and it needs to be addressed because it is a cancer on this country. It's a cancer on the world. It's the social media stuff. The studies have been done. The results are in. It has been proven, and you can just look out into the world and see this is true. All these warnings of what God uses as alcohol for us to be wary of letting things have too much power over us or control us, social media is the exact same thing as alcohol. And what I mean by that, one comes in a can, one's an app on your phone, but what it does to the person, to their mind, it is the exact same thing. People are dependent on it. It causes problems at home. They lose their jobs. I even heard a study the other day they did where they asked people, if you had to choose between your social media and your fundamental rights, you know, as an American citizen, which would you rather have? An astonishing amount of people said they'd rather keep their social media and lose their rights, their freedoms. That is how controlling this thing has become. And not only that, think about what it's doing. I mean, it's fine to get on there to check up with relatives that live far away, see how they're doing, that kind of thing. But if God says that the thought and intent of man's heart is only evil all the time, and then you give the world a platform where the 2 and 3 crazies from this small town and the 2 and 3 crazies from that small town can all join together on one big platform, guess what that does? It emboldens them. They feed off of each other. The bar is constantly getting raised higher and higher for attention. That is exactly why we have seen our society go off the rails in the last however many years it's been around, 15 years maybe. That is the rocket ship that is sending this country straight to hell, is the social media. But again, people want to wag the finger if somebody wants to have a drink, but then they'll spend all day on social media and they don't see the connection. See, you got to think, those warnings about that is the same as what God would be saying about social media. But here's the problem. 2,000 years ago, you can't be sitting around the fire saying, you know, Peter, you love me? Yeah, of course I do, Lord. Well, feed my sheep. All right. Well, Peter, do you love me? Well, yeah, Lord, I told you I did. Well, then manage your social media responsibly. Social what? They won't have any idea what he's talking about. So see, that's what I'm saying. It's not the what, it's the why. You have to understand and look deeper into it. The what is to get the wheels turning. The why is going to give you the answers that you need to understand the life we now live here in this day and age with the technology changes, cultural changes, and that's been the constant through all the years, and it'll always continue to do that as long as the reader is able to see it. And that was the idea. God had to lay these things out in principle, so with the hopes that the future reader would then pick up on it and be able to apply it the way it needs to be applied. So that's what we want to think about, and that's what we want to look at. Now we need to deal with this idea of law versus faith. Because what did I just do? You know, if you want to leave it up to people to start, you know, kind of, I guess, deciding what sin is and what sin isn't just by labeling a bunch of things, well, I mean, we could all sit here with all our different ideas of what that may be. Like I just said, I don't like social media. I think it could be sinful to a person. So does that mean social media is a sin? And then if you use it, you're sinning? No, that's not what I'm saying. But that's what the law says. If we wanted to be in a law system, that's what that would then be, because law is parameters. It labels things. It holds people in containment or confinement. Well, if we all did that, say God let us judge each other and decide what sin is and what sin isn't to, you know, for our neighbors instead of him being the one that does it, well, guess what we're going to do? With all our difference of opinions and views on things. Again, I'm not talking the standards that God has set, okay? You guys know the basics. We're not dealing with basics here. This is an advanced course today. We're talking about in-depth things. So we're not talking about the basics, the standards. We're talking about the in-depth. So if we were to do that, then all that would end up happening is we would all just end up condemning each other to hell over a bunch of frivolous, stupid things that doesn't even matter, and God would be sitting there twiddling his thumbs, waiting another 10,000 years to have enough people in heaven to play baseball. Does that sound like a well-thought-out plan of salvation by the Creator of heaven and earth? No, it's not. So that's obviously not the answer. So we have to move past this idea of law and just labeling things and finding confinements to hold ourselves in so that we don't find ourselves to be condemned in the final day. Well, it's a hard thing to do because the faith-based system is all about freedom, and with freedom comes responsibility. And it's a process you have to go through. But you are expected to achieve it. Jesus said, the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. Don't we want to be free? We should, but not everybody does. The law is comfortable. It's what we've always known. From children, with the law that of our parents, you know, the code of conduct we had lived by, that they, you know, instructed us on and enforced, to the laws of the land that we now live in. Well, if you break the law, you know, you're going to go to jail. So it's very familiar to people. So it's very easy to find ourselves sticking with that system. But Jesus says, the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. He also said something else. And this is the implied but unspoken third step to our faith. He says, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. Go and learn what this means. Okay? So we know sacrifice is the law. We know mercy is the faith-based system, the New Testament. But then he puts something on us, and he says, now go and learn what this means. He didn't answer. He didn't tell us. He said, go and learn what it means. So the way this works, this is the implied third step, that he expects us to mature. He expects us to graduate, we'll say, because this is our instruction manual. This is our teaching. So he teaches us. He expounds on what he taught us. He takes us even further. And then he says, now go and do something with it. That's the same thing we do with our children. We train them up. We raise them up. They graduate high school. What do we expect them to do? Go get a job. Buy a house. Start a family. And when are we proud of them? When they're out there doing it on their own without us having to tell them every decision to make. They're doing it on their own. They know what to do because I trained them. God's saying the same thing about us. You know what to do because I trained you. So go do it. Show me what you can do with what I've given you. Getting ahead of myself. I got to stop. Well, that's basically what's going on here, and that's the kind of things we need to think about. Go and learn what this means. So again, law is a confinement, and it's obligation. So anytime you feel those things, whatever it is you're doing, if you feel it's confinement or if it's obligation, then it's of a law nature. Faith, and here's the difference, big, big difference, is desire and choice. Nothing changed. The standard is still the same. God's the same yesterday, today, and forever. The only thing that changed is instead of him telling us what to do, we know what to do, and we do it on our own. That's the difference between obligation and having that choice and desire. And it's if you can see it, and if you start to live it, it's a great thing, and it is freedom. It is absolutely freedom. I was just going to point out, just real quick, just in Galatians 3, this isn't a new problem, this idea of people coming out of law, baptized into Jesus Christ, trying to go into the faith-based system, but end up going back to the law because it's comfortable and it's easier and it's familiar, so that's where people are inclined to go. We have to stop ourselves from doing that. So Paul says here, verse 2, this only I want to learn from you. Did you receive the Spirit by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Are you so foolish, having begun in the Spirit? Are you now being made perfect by the flesh? Have you suffered so many things in vain, if indeed it was in vain? Therefore, he who supplies the Spirit to you and works miracles among you, does he do it by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Just as Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. See, this is not a new problem. This is people's natural inclination. And God's trying to stop that and change that and say, don't do that. I've given you something greater. I've given you something better. Take it. It's yours. So here's what you got to think about. The faith-based system. We know it's a relationship between us and God. He lays that out. You know, he gives us marriages so we can understand our relationship to him. So, if this is a faith-based relationship, what does it mean when you have faith in somebody? It means you trust them. If you trust them, you have faith in them. So what does that mean? You're not telling them what to do anymore. You don't have to, because you know they know. You have faith in them. You trust them. So you don't have to instruct them. You just trust them. But do you ever think about it like this? It's a relationship, so it goes both ways. So if we are told that we need to have faith in God and trust in God and believe in God, do you realize that's because he's already given it to you and he's trying to elevate you to that same perfect balance of relationship because he's already done it first? You ever think about that? Think about it. Okay, one more example on this law versus faith thing, because it really helped open my eyes. So I'm going to use my own personal situation right now. So for a lot of years there, about 7 years, I drove gravel train for Crandall Brothers up in Sherlock. Chad and Randy Crandall, great people. Real good place to work. There was nothing wrong with the job. We lived comfortably. Everything was fine. But something inside me, I wanted to be on my own. I wanted to do it myself. And there's always been something in me to where I just don't like being told what to do. It makes me unreasonably angry. And I couldn't figure out why. And, you know, I've always been, it's not a rebellious thing. It's not a proud thing. I didn't know what it was, but, you know, there's always that, you know, got a problem. Well, I finally figured out what it is. It's because I crave freedom. Freedom is what drives me. So it's not so much of any of those other things is why I don't like being told to do what to do. It's because God has given me a brain, and I'd like to use it once in a while. I know what I need to do, so just let me do what I need to do. I don't need you to tell me. Well, certain somebody showed up where I was and really put a hinkering on everything. And that was the push I needed. I partnered up with my nephew Jake, got my own truck, and thanks be to God, we're into the second year now, and we're still going. But I tell you what, I work harder now than I've ever worked in my life. But I don't have a boss telling me to do it. Now I get to choose. Now anybody who runs a business or a company, you know the only thing that changes when you go into work business for yourself is your customer is your boss. You don't have a customer, you don't have a business. But the difference now is, instead of punching a time clock because my boss tells me I have to, I'm desiring to be pleasing to my customer. So see, nothing changed. Nothing changed in my life. I still get up every day, I get in a truck, and I haul dirt. But everything changed. And that's the difference between law and faith. Nothing changed, but everything changed because it changed up here. Now you're not being told what to do. You're not in confinement and you're not under obligation. Now you get to desire and you get to choose and you get to show God what you're made of and you get to show yourself what you're made of too. And if you're driven like I am for freedom, that means everything. That's the difference right there. Now we need to come to understanding what overcoming means in the most literal sense. Because again, I'm not talking basic things here, the simple standards that God has set for us to live by that's unchangeable. We're past all that. We're talking about all these little lifestyle differences that people want to get nitpicky about that just doesn't need to be happening. Because it's up to us now. God's trained us. We know what we're doing. We can make our own choices for ourselves. So, again, there's call for overcoming in Scripture. New Testament is covered with you. Oh, it got overcome the old man. Okay, yep, that's right. That's what it says. But what people tend to do then is they associate overcoming with complete abstinence from whatever it is. That doesn't work. That's not correct. Overcoming is a power shift. Something was out of control, you put it in control. If it can't be controlled, it needs to be removed completely. So what I mean by that, or let me give you an example. Let's say I had a overeating problem. So I go to the doctor, he says, yeah, you know, you're not doing too good. You're going to have to overcome that eating disorder. So I go down to the church and ask the guy there, well, doc says I got to overcome this. What does that mean? Well, abstinence. You got to stop. You had a problem with eating, you got to stop eating. Okay, all right. So it comes back a few days later, you know, thank Mr. Preacher Man, you know, I overcame it. I don't eat no more. All right, good job. And then 5 days later, he's doing the funeral for the guy because he starved to death. It doesn't work that way. Again, we're trained by God. We know what we're doing. We can make these decisions for ourselves. So when it comes to the way we live our lives, we can decide if something just needs to be well-maintained or controlled, or if something needs to be gone completely. And either way, if something was out of control and now it's under control, you've overcome it because the power shift has been made. You control it. It doesn't control you. Remember when we talked about that at the beginning? That's what it means. So, still got to deal with Romans 6. He put to death the old man. I mean, it's very clear. Crucified. That's death. So, this was always a difficult passage for me. I mean, I see what it says. I can read it as well as you can. You know, people, we've heard many preachers talk about, you know, you're dead. You got to die. And that's always been such a non-starter to the conversation for me because it's like, I don't know how to comprehend that. You're telling me that I'm dead, but now I have to do something, but I can't do anything because you just killed me. So it didn't make any sense in my mind. It's like, there's got to be a better way to understand what he's talking about here. So what I believe is we do die. But it's obviously it's not us. I'm standing here talking to you. You're looking at me. We're all alive, obviously. It's a part of us that dies. Look at Romans 2 and 28. We're going to look at a couple things and I'll explain it. Romans 2 and 28 says, "For he's not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not from men but from God." Keep that in mind. Go to 2 Thessalonians. Second Thessalonians 2 and 3. "Let no one deceive you by any means," for that. Go to 4. I don't want to get into all that. Go to 4. "Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." That's the man of lawlessness. Now, what God can do is he can have the spirit of a bigger frame of understanding, like, kind of affects the whole world, but at the same time it's also in the heart of every man. It goes from big picture to very specific, to where this man of lawlessness, as he's described and opposes, exalts himself, you know, shows himself that he is God, that is your carnal man. That was the first you that was trained by the world and that was all screwed up. That's the guy you got to kill. Where do you find him? In your heart. That's the circumcision of your heart. So what God did is he told us somebody needs to die here. There is a crucifixion going to happen with this old nature, this old man. He's going to have to die. And then he tells us where he's at in our heart. And then he tells us what he looks like so we can find him and cut him out. That's how this works. That's that transformation process that we all need to go through. And that's what God is doing here for us. You know, if you talk to these liberal, woke people, whatever they are, that's basically what they'll tell you. They are their own God. So it can't get any more specific than that. It's not like I'm making this up. The carnal man, the natural man, wants to be his own God. And until he is forced out of the way by a stronger power, which is only the Holy Spirit, only Jesus Christ, he will remain there and you will perish. You kill him, you get him out of there, you put Christ on the throne of your heart. Now you make your decisions based on the good teachings that he has given us. He says, "No one can snatch you out of my hand." That's what we have. That's what he's given us. That's what we ought to be doing. That's what we ought to be focusing on. All this debate, you know, Jesus drank wine, was it alcoholic, was it not? Who cares? You want to be on social media? Go for it. In either case, if somebody's going to ask me what I think, I'm going to say I hope you can control it. Whether it's drink or social media or anything else for that matter, I hope you can control it. I hope you have more power over it than it has over you. And I hope it's not affecting your marriage or your walk with God or your job or anything else. I mean, figure it out. What do you think? Is this, you know, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. So figure it out. Can it stay? Does it need to go? It ain't for me to decide for you. I decide for myself. You know, I can decide for yourselves too, because we're all trained by the same Father. We've all been educated the same way. And now he expects us to graduate and go and live our lives and think for ourselves. Can't believe I actually got done on time. I really didn't think that was going to happen. I hope you guys understand. I hope we went somewhere today and you can kind of see where I'm at, where I'm thinking, and the kind of thoughts I have going on, that it's going to be helpful to you. That you have everything you need. You can do this. He has empowered us. No problem. If we don't focus on the what, that gets the wheels turning. We look for the underlying why, that concept that's at the bedrock of what he's talking about. And that's the timeless part that we can use to navigate our lives. It doesn't matter what the details are. He's already got it covered if we're able to see it. So when we read like that. Thank you.